I'm Chris.
And I'm Owen.
And this is the Dead Wargamer Society.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to our monthly episode. Getting back into the usual swing of things, talking about a dead war game. But before we get going on that, Chris, what have you been up to hobby-wise?
That's a good question. I did, you know, finally kind of cave into peer pressure and getting into Horus Heresy again. I had played in the first edition. I had some salamanders, sold them off. New edition looks cool. The box looks cool. I do really like the story and the fluff. So I have been working on a few models that I had around as test models to paint up as Alpha Legion. And it's been a lot of fun. So that is mostly what I've been working on the hobby front. What about you?
Absolutely nothing. Still trying to move, so hobby stuff is put away. I have been scheming and dreaming about different things I want to do when we get to the new house, and I have a hobby set up again, but unfortunately nothing has been put on the table in some time, and likely to stay that way until probably the August or September time frame. So I'm a bit of a bore on this front. You'll probably hear this for the next few episodes, but I've got some grand ideas of what I'm going to start painting first once we get back to it. But I want to start today's main topic off, get right into it. I'm going to tell Chris about a game called Urban War. Now, Chris, had you heard much about this game prior to us talking about it?
So most of my exposure was Owen in our Discord being like, hey, we're going to set this up to play at ArmorCon. And I saw the models, and then Owen had too much of a good time, and Urban War didn't happen. So that's that's been most of my exposure to the game so far. I did do a little bit of research. I did check into some models and stuff, but I didn't realize it, you know, I had no exposure prior to us doing the podcast of anybody playing locally or seeing any tournaments or seeing even any, like, people playing at conventions.
Right on. Did you ever frequent the Daka Daka forums back in the olden days?
Those were a bit before my time. Okay. Like I knew they existed at one point, but it was really before I got too much into gaming.
So I shouldn't start making a bunch of Daka Daka or Warseer inside joke board references?
I mean, you could, I don't know, someone else will get it.
It's going to make for some great radio if we have a lot of awkward silence here. That's some fun listening for the folks out there in radio land. So I'll get right to our usual setup of this and then get into, I think, a little bit more of a discussion on it. So as we always start with a dead game, let's go through the wiki-style summary. Urban War was a hard science fiction tabletop war game set in the Void universe, developed by John Robertson, Bill Ward, and John Grant at iCore/Urban Mammoth. More on that later. Urban War was published by Urban Mammoth in 2005. The game is notable for its fantastic artwork from Clinton Langley and Adrian Smith, as well as its unique packaging. It was sold in old VHS tapes, which I thought was really cool. The game is played using about a dozen 28mm miniatures per side. It's played on a 4x4 table, and players roll D10s. So I'm going to go through the background in really, really, really short order. It's a hard science fiction game. It's about a series of humans and some post-humans fighting for control of different resources in space. The game Urban War is set in the Void universe. Listeners might recognize the Void 1.1 name. These factions are the same between the games, but the miniatures and even some of the background for these factions change pretty significantly. Just to give a brief history, I guess, on Void and Urban War, the folks at iCore started around 2000 making games. You might have heard of a game called Celtios, which was a game set in medieval Ireland and England, a fantasy war game. That was one of their products. They also made a game called Void 1.1, which is also a sci-fi game. iCore ran into some problems, and to the best of my understanding, and I'm not a real expert in Scottish wargaming history, so if any of the Scots out there want to correct me, please chime in. There was a transition of people from the folks at iCore to the folks at Urban War, as well as a transfer of intellectual property rights. So Urban War can be thought of as something of a reboot of the Void 1.1, or just general Void universe. So there's a handful of human factions. You've got Viridians, which are, you know, space marines or colonial marines from the movie Aliens. Junkers, which are Romans in space. They also control gladiators, who in urban war can be their own little sub-faction or own little faction that they can ally with the Junkers. They're gladiators in space. You've got VASA, which is kind of like the United Nations in space, but they're also heavily Russian-themed, which I thought was interesting. You've got the Triad, which paradoxically is the basically space Yakuza, so lots of Japanese references there. I'm not quite sure why they went with the Chinese gang name, but it worked for them. You get the Syntha, which are mostly robotic, but also some kind of post-human android cyborg type people. You've got Corlons, who are weird snake aliens that are the main antagonist of the setting. And then very, very late in the game in second edition, they introduce Neo-Iskandrian. So the game's set on the planet of Iskandria. The former tyrant of the planet was just in basically stasis and comes out with a bunch of power armor guys with time control technology that do lots of special fun things, had a little bit of a unique look. So that's just a real high-level overview of the background. In terms of the rules, I'm not going to go through every little bit of rule, but just some highlights, what really made the game stand out to me. You had different rules for different scales of play. So Urban War itself was more of a strike team level game. So you play with maybe, I think the starter sets were six, a general game would be about a dozen miniatures. If you wanted to play an army scale game, they had a rule set called Metropolis. And they also had add-ons for the strike team forces. So in addition to the Neo-Iskandrian expansion, you also had a separate add-on to play extra-large monsters and robots called CLAUs, C-L-A-Us. I don't remember what the acronym stands for, but it let you play with some big toys and also gave you some tools to handle the big, scary monster things, which I thought was an interesting way to manage rules and options for a system. The game is pretty familiar to anyone who's played a GW game, except it's based on D10s rather than D6s, even down to the formatting. So if you need to roll, add a stat plus a die roll and get a 10, you have a table explaining if you roll an 8, you need, if you have a stat of a 2, you need an 8 plus. If you stat a 3, you need a 7 plus, on and on and on. The two real unique systems of this were the order system. So at the start of every turn, you secretly assign every model an order. And that could either be Snapfire, which is short for I want to actually do a normal activation, or Overwatch, which just put you immediately into Overwatch. I thought that was an interesting approach to orders. It's reminiscent in a lot of ways to something like, say, the Infinity System, or even some of the ideas that Chris has hinted at from Warzone Eternal. So I thought that was an interesting kind of middle step in the evolution of this type of game, as well as the caliber system. So a lot of games have been taking a cue from historical war games at this point with different veteran levels. This is the implementation of that. So you can hire a troop at different caliber, basically different levels of training, in addition to just giving it a flat stat buff. So you're better at hitting things, you're better at moving, you have better command, you're less likely to run away. You get once per game, you get one of these for each of your caliber levels, the ability to take an extra action. And these can be linked together. So you can really Rambo through some people with a high caliber troop. But the army building system limits to how much of that you can do, which I thought was an interesting take on it. Speaking of army building, so Chris, I had you look into this. Was there any faction that caught your eye out of the ones we talked about?
So it's tough. I mean, I think each faction had some interesting aspects to it, but I'd probably say the top two that I was looking into would either be the Junkers
mm-hmm.
or the poorly named Triads. Interesting looking. I mean, like, the Junkers in particular, their starter seems to be, it's very reminiscent of Arbites from GW, mm-hmm. Which is also, you know, very similar to the Judge Dredd universe. And even though the fluff really does not mix that at all, because the models themselves seem to be criminals that are forced to fight, like, the models are neat. And with the Triads in particular, they're weird looking sumo wrestler bodyguards are a interesting model type that I really haven't seen too much before. So I think those two being a little bit more unique kind of interested me.
Okay, so let's say you wanted to play the Triad and decided that you really like the sumo wrestlers. If you want to play a Triad force, you need to take at least four retainers in order to play the force. So I think this is one of the things that was interesting and unique, but I also think it was really restrictive about the game, is that most of the factions, with the exceptions of the Viridian, Junkers, and Corlons, if I'm remembering correctly, locked you into taking a specific troop type. You had to take at least four of that type of model in order to play the faction. From there, you had to have more Caliber Zero models than Caliber One in general, more Caliber One than Caliber Two. Some exceptions are made for things like, I think some factions you can have the same number rather than just more, so you might get plus or one here and there. You also had to have a command model, so a leader. There were three characters per faction, as well as one generic, and also then an out. If you didn't want to take any of those, you could take, you know, a troop leader as one of your options in many cases. So is that, that sounds super appealing, having to take a bunch of PUDs instead of the cool, sexy things you like?
So I think the issue there is more along the lines that you're locked into one. You know, because I feel like a lot of games, you know, you're generally taking some form of grunt. There's very few games where it's just like, no, it's all elite all the time. That's it. You know?
Oh, yeah,
Especially in a system where there might be one faction that's all elite and everything else has some grunts. But usually there's a little bit more choices involved. Even just looking through like the model range for what's available, you really don't have like a lot of choices when you're just talking about retainers, you know, like there's just not a lot of options comparatively. I mean, comparing it, you know, whether you're comparing it to something that's like GW based, which a lot of people have, you know, experience with, where it's like, all right, you're playing Space Marines. It's not that you have to just take the Space Marine with bolt rifle in order to like fill your troop choices. You have other options that add more flavor to that. And I also don't like, you know, I don't really like a lot of armies that come, you know, going to the table and playing the same exact thing, because at that point you're kind of playing chess. Like if every time I come to the table and I'm playing Owen every single time, his thing has the same four models, you know, it starts to get old. You know, you don't have a lot of replayability there because of how restrictive that can be with the build.
I'll give the folks over at Urban Mammoth credit. They did tweak this slightly for the Metropolis rule set. So you had to take some grunts, but it expanded your options with what type of grunts you had to take. So I do think they saw this for the exact reason you mentioned. If you're playing your buddies over and over again, they can mix things up, but the strike team rules really locked you into, you are locked down to taking this in many cases. Again, some factions had some more options here, but most of them were pretty inflexible on that front. I do want to give these guys credit. They did do a lot in a very short period of time. So the Void range was frankly gigantic for a range that had only been released for 4 years. Urban War borrowed where it could. I think it took the best options they had for a lot of the Void stuff, and then resculpted things that were maybe showing their age a little bit. The sculpts, and please chime in if you think I'm off base here, some of the sculpts definitely look like the late 90s, early 2000 Kev White metal sculpts that we all know from GW that we look back at now and gonna go, it's a little bit wonky. Do you that's a fair way to say that?
Yeah. Yes. Man. Almost skipping like a little bit ahead. Right, and getting into this came out around the same time as Infinity, right? And we had some notes here about, you know, both games had some solid painters working on the lines, and one obviously became a big game and one did not. You know, honestly, I think Mercs falls into that same timeline. Like Urban War, Mercs, and Infinity were all out around the same time.
They were a little bit different. Megacon Games started that later, pre-2010, if my memory serves, but it was later than 2005. So I'm going to do some scene settings for the listeners just so they can kind of get into the mindset of someone from this vintage, as hard as that might be. So I want you to, you know, close your eyes and imagine a time where America was finally, contrary to all the rumors we heard in the 1990s, finding out that Gwen Stefani was not, in fact, a hollerback girl. All the youths were on MySpace as opposed to the Book of Faces or whatever the heck the kids use these days, the TikToks. People had flip phones. That was a new innovation. Texting was still new and exciting. GW had just a year before released the exciting fourth edition of Warhammer 40,000. with a new color cover and finally getting away from the god-awful Dark Elder sculpts and Black Templars. And two games from the European continent were released. Urban War, which was released by some folks in Scotland, and Infinity, released by some folks in Spain. They share a lot of DNA, and I think they were put out because people saw an opportunity in the market after the comparatively less exciting release of Warhammer 40,000 3rd Edition. I know that rubbed a lot of folks the wrong way, particularly in the States. I don't want to assume for Europe, but if you look at the number of games that tried to come up as competitors, particularly in the sci-fi market, I do think that's something that you see a bit of. I would also say this was also the same time frame where the Lord of the Rings movies were being released, and Games Workshop put a non-trivial amount of effort into releasing a game to support that, growing their retail footprint into malls across America and the world. So I do think there was some good times for them, but they weren't necessarily as focused on Warhammer 40,000 as they might be today. So why is one still something we're talking about, and I can go to pretty much any LGS in the country and find models for? And why is one something that I have to explain to Chris what it is and make a bunch of allusions to Fergie and No Doubt? I think there's a few reasons for that. One is, I think Infinity and Urban War both had some distribution problems, at least in the States. I think Infinity maybe manage those a little bit better. I recall, and this is dating myself here, going to thewarstore.com and being really excited I could get Infinity models. And when something new would come out, it might be, you know, half a week late, but it would get there when it was expected to. The Urban War models tended to have some struggles there. I also think, well, Infinity certainly had more than a few models that we have seen a replacement sculpt for, and then yet still another replacement sculpt for from the first edition. I don't know that they had quite as many goofy things in the line as late as they did relative to what the folks at Urban Mammoth did. Would you say that's a fair statement?
I would say looking through the line right now, there's a lot more models that I'd be less excited about than that I would be excited about. And that kind of goes across all the different factions. Like, there's not one faction in here where I'm like, man, everything is awesome. and I think it's also like a general flavor thing as well, which is kind of strange because when you look at, or I shouldn't say you, when I look at, you know, the Urban War models, compared to Infinity models, a lot of the Infinity models seem to be a little bit more unique for the time frame compared to a lot of the other stuff that was out there. Infinity's always had like this this very sleek and very almost anime feeling sci-fi, which is kind of unique comparatively. When I look at a lot of the Urban War stuff, it looks like they took major influence from Necromunda, from 40K, from Mutant Chronicles, and a lot of the sculpts seem very reminiscent of stuff that was out in the 90s. It doesn't really seem like they made improvements. It seems like it was kind of like, hey, can I copy your homework here?
which is funny because if you had asked me in 2005 which game, everything else being equal, I thought had the best shot at still being around almost 20 years later, I would have told you Urban War because, to some extent, I feel like it maybe cribbed a little bit more homework from Games Workshop, both in terms of rules presentation and in terms of theming. You know, mm-hmm. Corallons aren't too far away from Tyranid, so if I am mad at Games Workshop because they, I don't know, nerfed Blood Angels or removed my faction from the game, Urban War didn't seem like a huge step, but could be that there was an unmet need for anime-inspired games. It could be that we live in the darkest timeline and the game with a cat girl always wins. I don't know. It could also be the case that Infinity had a much more consistent brand identity that was unique. And I think that might be part of it. When I look at an Infinity model, I know it's an Infinity model. There aren't a whole lot, especially now, but even back in the late 2000s, they had a certain look and feel to them. The Urban War models, without really looking, in a few cases, okay, you can tell this is the same sculptor. If you put a VASA suppressor model next to a Junker, I don't necessarily know those come from the same universe. There's not a whole lot of shared visual language there. So I do wonder if that disjoint hurt people's ability to look at the go, okay, yeah, this is great. This is a something I can really immerse myself into in comparison to something like Infinity.
I also get too where, you know, like it's one of those subjective things, right? Because while someone might get super duper excited about something, that's not always going to apply. And, you know, I think that's the tough part is that you know, in particular, enjoy a very grim, dark kind of thing. you know, I feel like if it's post-apocalyptic, if there is rust and oil and, you know, just death all over it, that it's, you know, screaming Owen. You have a very outspoken kind of opposition to a lot of anime style kind of things. You know, people who meet Owen in person should 100% ask him his reasons why he hates furries.
I wouldn't say that's anime related.
It's in that wheelhouse. Like, I mean, if you look at Infinity, there's definitely some nomad models that appeal to that demographic. and you know, the whole catgirl thing is in that, you know, in a similar boat. You know, it's shades of different fur styles, I guess. I think that could definitely contribute if you're looking at them. You know, looking at it from a slightly more objective place, like, granted, at the time I wasn't that involved in a lot of these things, but I would have picked Infinity over Urban War to succeed, and a lot of that would deal with it being a little bit more unique. You know, if something is coming up to compete against a product and it's just kind of sort of referencing the same, like if you're coming up against GW but you're basically just copying GW, it's really just not gonna work out in a terrific way. I mean, I say that knowing full well, you know, Mantic has been profitable, but I don't see Dead Zone or any of the other, like, Mantic, you know, 40K comparison product or, you know, fantasy comparison product really overtaking what they were inspired by. And I think it's like, there's a lot that goes into that, especially in that when you have somebody who's already invested in a system, unless that system like completely craps out, someone's not gonna leave it to go to something that's kind of the same, but in the infancy of starting.
I would have in 2005 said that Urban War would have done better for a few real basic market fundamentals that aren't really captured by a flat comparison. The rulebook is very well written. The fluff is excellent. The rules are clear and concise. It's one of my favorite things about the rule set. Infinity's first edition rulebook I own, it was a disaster. The translation was not terribly clear. I know people on the internet say, oh, it wasn't as bad as people made it out to be in the forums. I was never on the Infinity forums, but I can tell you as someone that owned the book, it was not terribly clear what the heck you were supposed to do to play the game. You could sort of figure it out. You could go to a forum, but responses were slow. The internet wasn't quite as primal as it was today. I could go to the store and buy an Urban War or Metropolis rulebook. I had a harder time finding an Infinity rulebook. It took Infinity longer to get into distribution. I think what changed that was the ubiquity of the internet and how the internet became more ingrained with people that played war games. I think the folks at Corvus Belli were very smart to give away the rules for free, give away the model statistics for free. I think to your point too, where Urban War is a game that I love now because it's so easy to pick up and play, I think it's a hard game to play every weekend because, as you pointed out, you've got one or two options per troop. I can take a suppressor with a shield and baton or with a shotgun, and I can make them Cal 0 or Cal 1. That's about it. There's not that Infinity-style, infinite choices. So the puzzle aspect of building the bestest list just isn't quite there. I think it's interesting that both games prominently featured painted miniatures by Angel Heraldez. he's obviously much better known for his work with Infinity now, and I think that also speaks to some of the uniqueness of the models, and I think his style works a little bit better. The really bright, super clean look just looks banging on the Infinity models, whereas I think the Urban War models, it's like, okay, yeah, I've seen a dude in power armor that's rusty. I think the Corlons in the background are really interesting. They build coral structures that slowly overtake a world. They're a water-based species, which is interesting. They're very snaky. There's a little bit of an alien the movie head thing going on, which I think is kind of cool. But I think the range never sold that fantasy as hard as it needed to really get people excited. I think what you saw with the giant monsters and the claws, the giant robots, probably would get people really excited, but they were pricey for the time. And to give people an idea what pricey for the time means, you'd almost pay $30 or $40 for something larger than a heavy warjack and war machine, which at the time, I mean, I'm clutching my pearls right now. How dare you? I mean, that's 40 Big Macs. I can't imagine.
Also, I mean, like, I do remember it because that's around the time I third edition, actually going into fourth edition, was around the time that I did first start, you know, seeing some 40K and what have you. Like, I remember at the time, I think a Land Raider was $35, and that was, like, a really, really big deal. Like, people were, you know, at the time, oh, man, I used to be able to get two Rhinos for less than that.
Yeah. I got a starter for War Machine for $35, and the rulebook, Prime version 1, black and white, I think was $15. So, we're old! Hooray! In brief, I mean, this is a game that I know you don't know a whole hell of a lot about. It's a game that I really like, and it's a game that I'm sure with enough peer pressure I could convince you into ordering a Force 4 and we could play together. I can tell from the way you're talking about it, though, this is something that you might try because, okay, it'll shadow one up, but it's not something you're going to be like, oh man, this is the best thing that's happened to me. Have I captured that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been certain games on the channel that I've been really excited about. Like, usually after having a discussion, after looking into it, it's been like, all right, I gotta own this, you know? like, even before the channel, you know, like, there were certain things like Eden, you know? We, you know, talked about it when Captain Con, and I had ordered it by the time I got home, you know? and it's just, it's something that, like, gripped me, and not only gripped me, but, like, kept me, like, really involved. You know, I think Confrontation is another one where, looking into it, that combination of, like, hey, there's some really cool rules here, and also, like, the fluff is really cool, and also, like, the models are awesome. And I think that was true of Eden. I think that's true of Confrontation. You know, and there's been a few games where, like you said, it was one of those, like, hey, yeah, you know, like, for X amount of dollars, this seems reasonable to play a game with Owen, you know? you know, like, Mercs was a hard value to pass up. It was like, oh, for $40, you own the entire faction, you know?
Yep.
And, yeah, we'll like, play a game. And this one's tough.
I do think it speaks to the power of nostalgia that you're looking at this having never seen it before and going, yeah, yeah, that looks like a game. I have really fond memories of it. This is one of the games that was very much in my wheelhouse. So this, Dark Age, War Machine had taken off, so I won't throw it in there, but that was another one of the games that came out in that 2003 to 2005 time frame that shared a lot of the same independent sculptors, shared a lot of the same art style. It was interesting to see them all kind of grow up together. I do think the game suffers from having been a pivot from another war game. So you had people that were excited about Void, and then it became Urban War, but also changed in a lot of weird ways. I do think that that might have hurt its progress. But at the end of the day, I do think it's a fun game now if you're looking to try it out. I'd recommend it, but I'd also say this less hard of a recommendation than maybe something like Dark Age of Eden. It's convenient in a lot of ways. You're able to get the models through an official source from the official mold. The rules are all free up on that website. So it's also a very low-cost game. You can get away with spending $100 and get a very good army with multiple options to me, that is an interesting gameplay, you know, maybe for a season or once or twice at a convention, where it's not so much of an outlay that, okay, I need to spend $300-$500 on this, paint 100, 200 guys, and then I can finally play a game. Something you put together a week, be happy enough with it, go to a convention, get 4 or 5 games, and at that point, at least for my dollar, I think I've got my money's worth.
Yeah, looking at like where a lot of the stuff is, and it seems as though it's British pounds. pounds to dollars, it does seem like most of the starter boxes are between like $32 and $38 for a starter box.
Yep.
So it's not terrible. I'm interested in how horrific the shipping would be.
It wasn't too bad. I ordered a bunch of the Mycentha stuff from them during COVID or during the COVID lockdowns. Mm-hmm. I think I spent $15 in shipping. It was surprisingly decent for shipping a bunch of metal models across.
Mm. Interesting.
One thing I should mention before we take off, there is some new developments in this universe. Seb Games has purchased a license to Void 1.1 and are currently producing Void 2.0, using a lot of the miniatures from the Void 1.1 original line from the 2000 timeframe. So if you like vintage wargame models, this might be something worth taking a look at. We can put links up to the show notes showing where you can pick that up. The other thing that is interesting is that there's a 6mm war game called Age of Tyrants set in the Urban War universe, and the folks over at Noble Knight actually have a pretty healthy stock of those models. So if you want to get your Urban War fix in, but on a budget and very, very small scale, that might also be something worth taking a look at, folks. Last point I had, just in my head, not in the show notes, I did want to touch on in terms of weird things I've noticed. The folks at Urban Mammoth, and this seems to be a UK thing, and maybe Chris, you can get sense on this, they released a lot of stuff via magazine. So the Urban War rules themselves initially came out in a series of magazines released for the game. They had another product called Warheads, which was a super deformed, almost like Robin Hood, early England style RPG slash war game that was released via magazine. I know the folk Mantic started the Mantic Journal when they were releasing their initial rules for things like Kings of War. Have you noticed a lot of journal or magazine English products?
No, I think that was more a product of the time. More than anything else, you know, like, because, man, that just reminds me a lot, because again, you know, a lot of my early stuff was GW stuff, but like, I remember, you know, White Dwarf was a pretty big thing, and there was a, especially back then compared to now, there was a lot of content, I feel like, in the old White Dwarves, like, and not just, you know, painting and, like, advertisements for new stuff coming out, but like, there was, like, I remember, there was, like, a White Dwarf article with, like, a complete subset of rules for playing the game completely differently for, like, Warhammer Fantasy. And that mm-hmm. also, around that same time, they had come out with the Black Gabbo as, like, a companion piece, almost, for, or like, the White Dwarf, which was a free e-zine, which also had a lot of content. Like, I remember, you know, bringing it up, there were really cool rules, and like, man, I would super like to find them again. But there was a rule set for almost like a Bretonian campaign game,
yep.
where you would create your small little warband. Is where you find that they basically took, you know, a Knight's Tale directly from this, but. you made your small Bretonian warband. You had like a knight. You might have a second knight. You'd have like some footmen and maybe something kind of like a sorcerer. And that was it. And basically they had different scenarios, to go through how you'd build experience. There'd be like a jousting thing. There would be a co-op hunting down like the Jabberwocky. Like, it was a lot of cool stuff, and it was totally free. Like, it didn't even cost just to get that thing. They just provided these rules, but it seemed like, you know, that was much more like a kind of like a sign of the times. Like, I think, you know, in that early 2000s, you know, around the same time right before, you know, like MySpace became a thing, you know, as the internet was just starting, like this was a way to do things. And I think that was even other like industries. Like, I mean, think about like the music scene and how there were, like, every music scene had a magazine, right? Like, there, if you were into metal, there was like a metal magazine that was a print magazine, right? Like, that would sometimes come with a cassette. Like, there was,
well, I mean I think there's there's magazines and there's
zines.
you could get what was the metal one, Revolver, but there was also like a zillion local zines. I think you saw similar stuff with War Games, and Fictional Reality comes to mind, relative to something like White Dwarf, which is a shop magazine. What is that, Wargaming Illustrated? That's also, I believe that's a English publication, but they're in pretty much every LGS in the country. So I do think that it's still something, but to your point, I definitely think it's not where games today are putting their marketing dollars. I do think they're also maybe a little less liberal with that stuff. So, I mean, you will see in White Dwarf now still, hey, here's, if you have this box, here's another game to play. It tends to be a little abridged compared to what it was. Or if there's something special, I think that's now going to be a board game with plastic model. Like, it's going to be, for lack of a better term, it's going to be more of a product than it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, a lot of the times when people are trying to build it, they leave it more in the hands of the community now, and they're a little bit less involved. I think, you know, a lot of companies either rely more on, like, an outreach program, you know, like Privateer used to with their press gangers, you know, and, like, a lot of companies have. Or, you know, they're also looking into a lot of the social media, you know, like, looking at some of the newer games that have come out or are in the process of coming out, like Rivenstone, you know, they were on Penny Arcade, you know, or with the guys from Penny Arcade, doing a live Twitch feed during their Kickstarter, you know, to show off the game. You know, other games will get sent down and people will check out, you know, videos that Ash puts up with Guerrilla Mini Gaming to be like, oh man, like, I want to check out this game. I'm going to go on YouTube and search this game. You know, you don't see a lot of people kind of like going down to their store to check stuff out or looking for reading material. You know?
Yeah, I mean, what kind of dick would, what kind of dick would start a newsletter? I mean, God, what a chump. So anyway, subscribe to the Dead Wargamer Society newsletter in addition to our podcast. Last but not least,
I'm sure plenty of people will read it on the toilet, Owen.
That's all I wanted. You know, you can read my little spiel for 5 minutes while you're doing your business. It's a little harder to put on a 45-minute or hour-long podcast. I mean, maybe for some people that works. For me, I'm all about the business. So, ain't got time for 45 minutes of jibba-jabba. Do you want to read off the events and then we can clock out?
Yeah. So, we should probably go into, Owen, you know, you clearly enjoy some of the sculpts here. Do you have any favorites?
Oh, yeah. I'm quite keen on the Corlon Venom Drake and Neopi model from Syntha Faction. The Syntha have the biomechs really do it for me in a lot of ways. They're just very well made. They're always a joy to paint. And there's something about the Neopi sculpt with her holding a rifle, standing defiant. Really dig. That being said, probably my favorite part of the line is old hexagonal and biotoxin plastic terrain kits. They are excellent kits. If you can find them in the store, they go together like a dream, and they are great for Necromunda. Fan of the pod, Johnny Grogan, actually sold me some. He had a handful of these. They are going to make up the entirety of my Necromunda board. So if you see them in the wild, definitely something to keep your eye on. They do come up on eBay every now and again. They unfortunately are not on the Scotia Grendel website, which is where you can buy all these other models. That's my spiel. What were your favorites?
My favorites. That's that's putting it, like, loosely. As a whole, when it comes down to the starter box, I do think that the Junker Strike Team and the Vasa, right?
Yep.
The Vasa team are interesting. You know, I do think the Vasa, despite it being a little bit simpler, a little bit more human, I think they just put a little bit of extra work, a little bit of extra love in. And I do think that that's something that kind of shows through, which is neat. There's a few things like I really like the concept of, but unfortunately, the execution is kind of killing me just like a little bit. And I do also have to say, like, I can understand people balking at like a lot of these claw things, because I think they're the worst things in the range. They look so bad. Like, they don't even like look nostalgic good. You know, like they just look straight up horrifically bad.
they are on when they are on, but when they are off, they're off. I will definitely give you there's not a lot of middle ground. Banging or they're like, what the heck happened here?
What is actually banging? Which one? Where is
the
it?
The Venom Drake, the two Coralon ones, I do think look the all best right. out of your option.
You're gonna make me like actually look it up.
Gosh, I'm making you look at things.
Yeah, like come on now.
It's a good thing I'm paying you for this.
Really? Like, you guys are getting paid?
I mean, no. Yeah,
I got lost like, for a second here. So
the on page 3 of the Coralon stuff, you can see the Venom Drake and the Spore Drake. I think the Venom Drake is great. The studio paint job and the Spore Drake, the studio paint job really sells. How cool?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy.
So I was gonna say, you know, like when it comes down to the Coralons, I do think that they have some that are interesting, but it's the less is more ones.
Yes, absolutely.
So when you look at things like the Broodmaster, the Larvin, the Brood attacking with shields, you know, very very like even honestly, like their strike team box is neat. It's simple. You know, bits and pieces, especially in like the way some of the musculature is and certain things like that are, you know, a little bit reminiscent even of some of the early Brood stuff for Dark Age.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, you mix some of that with a little bit of like, you know, Xenomorph and like that's neat. But I think, you know, like it's one of those things where they did not have the tools to pull off like how cool some of these could be today if they were done right, you know, like looking at things like the Reaper hybrids or the hybrid breeder or the hybrid Hydra, like like some of these are just ugly as sin. Like it's so bad. It looks like something like someone would like scribble in their notebook, like, oh man, this would be totally cool. Like let's do the Xenomorph, but like what if the Xenomorph had like flabby boobs? Like, yeah. Like
I think it was a disconnect between Adrian Smith's art. I'm a big fan of his artwork in general. And I think the art for those things was done very well. When you look at the models though, yeah, there is a gap really selling that fantasy versus what you get. Yeah, I do think there was an, if not inconsistency in the tabletop painting art direction and inconsistency in sculpting, I do think that was probably reflected by financial woes. So, mm-hmm. you know, these guys started in 2004, the rule came out in 2005. By 2010, 2011, their website shut down. I actually have no idea what exactly happened. So urbanward.com disappeared, but then urbanward.nl, so Netherlands site, came up and did the second strike team. You know, they kind of hobbled along for a while, and I think by 13-14 they didn't pan out, which is a shame. They tried a lot of things. They had some interesting, you know, product interlays. There's a whole section in the back of the second edition book on how to dip your army or dip, Chris's favorite product. They had a partnership with Secret Weapon Bases or official Urban War bases for the game. So, you know, it's a shame that they tried a lot of things, but I do think they had some older stuff that they just couldn't clear out and get fresh in a fresh enough.
Yeah. I mean, like overall, I know some of that criticism was harsh. I'm waiting for the hate mail on this one, but like, you know, there are certain things about the game that seem pretty neat, you know, and Like, it's something I definitely give a shot to. It's not something that I am, like, super excited for. I think one of the things that actually honestly seems pretty neat that we didn't really dip into too much is like you said, it seems like there's a pretty neat, like, developed storyline to it. And I always think that's, like, one of the coolest things is that despite the fact that there's so much saturation in a lot of the markets like this, you know, there is a lot of sci-fi out there. There's a lot of grimdark. There's a lot of, you know, crazy stuff. But it's pretty amazing what some companies have put out in that regard. So I would be, like, really interested to kind of look into that a little bit more because that was one of the major things that impressed me about Eden. Mm-hmm. Like, the Eden book and reading the Eden book is awesome, you know, and I was very surprised. I did not expect that. But there were so many cool, like, unique things about it where it's definitely like so many other games. It's like, man, if someone just took the time and even did like a cheaper movie, you know, and I don't mean, you know, cheaper and terrible, like the Mutant Chronicles movie. But like someone just, you know, someone put like some B-list, like maybe even C-list, you know, acting talent in there, throw in like a Donnie Wahlberg, you know, like a Stephen Baldwin, you know, like something there, you know, like and you know, and I think it would be just so cool. I think there'd be you know, it would expose a lot of people to some of the stuff that's like really awesome in there. So I'd be interested in kind of seeing more of that. And you know, the next time we're at a convention together, you know, I'll probably check it out. Looking at like the shipping and the cost and stuff like that, I probably won't just order, especially not directly from them. It's tough too because looking, you know, it does seem like Noble Knight carries some, but like,
yeah
again, it's already more expensive on Noble Knight than it is even from the direct store, but the shipping's more reasonable. But yeah, so like it's open, there's stuff that's around, you know. Of course I say that and then people will hear this and be like, oh my god, like Owen loves this game, I'm gonna buy every single starter that's on Noble Knight.
I don't think I have that power. I need to start charging guests.
I mean, as much as we said that, you know, we did the Eden episode and Noble Knight stock just like completely evaporated. Like they actually used to have a bunch of starters for it.
So I'm gonna fix this problem for you, Shay. Contact Chris before you buy all the Urban War stuff so he can get what he wants. I really enjoy the game. It's a game that I know in the evening at a convention, I could teach you and we could have a fun game easily because it is such a simple system while having a beer or two. Not getting, you know, Armor Con, half a bottle of Jack blitzed, but I think we could have a fun game. I won't call it beer and pretzels because I do think there's more tactics to in that, but it's not a complicated
game. Fair. Yeah, I'm not saying no. I'm definitely not saying like, man, this is like the worst. You know, which I think, you know, this is a good time to mention because I mean, there is a Clan War episode that will be coming up in our future.
Speaking of the worst,
No, but I do think that, you know, it just with some of the feedback we got, you know, some people listen and they're like, oh, well, you know, you guys think it's terrible and you think this and that. And it's like, no, you know, like for people who like don't actually know us as people, I think you and I look at everything with like a very critical eye. And like, even if it's something we love, we'll still talk about like, hey, this is what the issue was with it. You know, like here's, you know, some of the downfalls and issues with Dark Age. Like, here's some of the issues that we've had with, like, Eden. And, you know, like, Clan War, there was some things that we brought up issues with, but, like, neither one of us was like, man, like, F this game. We're not going to play it. Like, you know, if, you know, you like the Crab Clan, like, you suck. You know, like, it was nothing, you know, it was definitely one of those, like, yeah, I'm totally down to play it, you know. So, like, just with this, I'm never going to say no. I'm not gonna say that. Yeah. There's certain things I might say no to, but like Clan War is not one of them. This is definitely not one of them. There honestly is just like there's a few things I will say no to. But like these games, you know, like especially if it's something that like you enjoy, and I think that's really important too. Is I mean we both travel to a lot of cons, and there's occasionally gonna be people who are like, oh man, this is like the greatest game ever. Like, dude, just like track us down. Like, man, we'll you know, like, we'll play it. I think my next con is probably Nova.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, even the stuff that's, like, weirder, like, I don't think I've ever really felt the need to play, what was it, War Master? Like, the epic version of fantasy, like, mm-hmm. but I know some people like absolutely like 100% like adore the game. Like, if you have two Warmaster armies, you want to like sit down at Nova for like an hour, show me how the game works, like play it, you know, can, you know, you want to play Clan War when I'm at Nova. I know there are some guys who are down there, like, bring it out. You're gonna have to bring me an army, but you know, like, bring it out, you know, like show us where we're wrong, you know, like show us how awesome the game it is. And I think a lot of times too, you know, somebody will come out with like that kind of enthusiasm and like excitement, and that's honestly what makes the game the best, you know, because when a system has awesome players behind it, it almost doesn't even matter if the rules aren't that great, like like, you know what I mean?
No,
there's certain things that are frustrating, but it's like, man, like, even looking back at certain games, like, even looking back at War Machine, you know, like, there's a distinct period of time where, like, the rules were super duper fantastic, where with that, like, I could just want to play that game to play that game. But the biggest thing that, like, I remember from the bigger times that I spent in War Machine was the community that I was involved in. Because there were so many just awesome people involved in that community, where it's like, even if it was a worse version of the rule set, I still would have had fun playing that game with those people, you know. And I think the same thing's true. Like, I, you know, I did play some 40K in the era of like the end of fourth, early fifth, where some people like had a lot of issues with the rules, and yeah, like, it wasn't the greatest thing, but like, I had a friend who was a like just a huge Black Templars fan, and like once or twice a week we'd get together and I'd put my guard on the table and he'd put his Black Templars on the table, and you'd always knew like who won or lost by the end of turn two, because either, you know, all of his models were off the table except for like two guys because I shot them all to death, or one of his units managed to make contact with one of my guys and that's it, they were just gonna roll the rest of the thing. But we'd still play it through and have a good time, you know, eat some food, relax, you know, have a couple beers, and it was great because of the people involved. And I think that's, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, it's a good opportunity, you know, show us we're wrong. Show us why your favorite game is your favorite game.
Yeah. I don't want to talk too much about this because I want to leave some meat for the next episode. So it's not all a rehash, but, we are looking to have on at least one, hopefully two guests for the next episode who are listeners who had some critiques of our episode on Clan War. It, as a game that I haven't played, I am especially interested in hearing what players have to say, particularly if I got something wrong. I do think there are issues with the, or not even issues, things about the game that make it a game that would be hard for me to recommend as hard as I recommend Dark Age or Eden. I think part of that comes down to personal taste. As Chris mentioned, I have certain aesthetic taste, and Clan War doesn't really fit into that. But I do think some of it is fundamental, and we can get into the weeds on that when we have our guest on. But I will say, for that, I've also committed to building an army for Clan War so I can play against some of these people, because it's something that now I'm interested enough to really want to get a game in, and I think playing the game makes you go through the extra steps and learn things, particularly rules related, that you wouldn't necessarily pick up from a peruse of the rule book. So I think it's a good exercise. Yeah, I love painting minis. It's a great thing. I take a lot of minis, which is one of the things I don't love about it, but we talk about the Clan War. Alrighty, well, it's been real. I'm Owen.
I'm Chris.
We'll catch you on the next one. Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.